Journey to Topaz by Yoshiko Yoshida. Chapter 4. 10 Days to Pack. Yuki came home from school one day to find Mother sitting Japanese fashion on a cushion in the middle of her bedroom floor. She was surrounded by boxes and cartons containing old letters, notebooks, photographs, and papers that had been stored in her closet for years. "What in the world are you doing?" Yuki asked. Mother scarcely looked up. "I suppose I must throw them out," she said sadly. "They're old letters from your grandmother and uncles and aunts in Japan." She shuffled through some papers and held up some crayon drawings. "Look, you did these in first grade," she explained. "And here are some by Kenichi. I just couldn't throw them out." There were boxes full of diaries, too, and assorted scraps of paper on which Mother had scribbled her 31-syllable Japanese poems. Page 32. Yuki felt dizzy on Mother's behalf. "You'll never finish in time, Mama," she sighed. "What will you do?" There was nothing Mother could do but keep sorting and tearing up and throwing out. "I'll just have to keep working until I finish," she said simply. The evacuation hung over their heads now, like the blade of a guillotine. No one knew when it would take place, but everyone knew it was only a matter of time. One of these days, the army would say, "Now," and they would have to be ready. Already, there was an 8 p.m. curfew for all Japanese, and they were forbidden to travel more than 4-5 miles from home. Shortwave radios, cameras, binoculars, and firearms were designated as contraband, and Ken had taken all their cameras, even Yuki's old box camera and Dad's field glasses, to the Berkeley police station. Mother was anxious to observe every letter of the law. As soon as it was required that enemy aliens register, she had gone immediately to get registered. Ken, too, had registered at the civil control station as head of their family. He had come home with a handful of baggage tags, which were to be put on everything they would take into camp. "Look," he said, tossing the tag onto the table. "From now on, we're family 13,453. The house soon began to look as though a hurricane had swept through it. Mother sold the living room and dining room furniture by putting a furniture for sale sign up in the window. Ken rolled up the rugs and took down all the pictures on the walls. Decisions had to be made about everything in the house. What were they to do with the piano, the writing desk, Mother's sewing machine and cabinets, the beds and bureaus and chests? Page 33. Father's golf clubs, Yuki's doll collection, Ken's record player and all his records, the washing machine, the bedding, the china and silver and linens, the coffee table, the lamps. Yuki didn't know what poor Mother was going to do with it all. There seemed to be enough in their house to fill up all of Bacon's van and storage and still have some left over. Mother made dozens of lists and often misplaced half of them. She decided that all the large items would go into commercial storage. The rest of their belongings would be spread around in the basements and attics and garages of various friends in Berkeley, like orphan children being distributed to concerned relatives. Their neighbors took as much as they could, and the rest went to families they didn't even know, for members of some of the Berkeley churches had offered storage spaces in their homes to help the evacuating Japanese. Yuki had her own small problem, which seemed large enough at the time. She had to decide what to put into the trunks going to storage, what to throw out, and what to take home with her into camp. Sometimes she would wake up in the middle of the night and suddenly decide to make changes, such as tucking Mrs. Jameson's pearl ring safely into the storage trunk instead of into her camp suitcase. "Remember," Ken cautioned, "we're only supposed to take whatever we can carry. That means no more than 2 suitcases each." "Okay," Yuki said, nodding at everyone. At every once in a while, she would try lifting her 2 cases to see if they could carry them herself. But as she added to them day by day, they soon grew so heavy she could scarcely lift them off the floor. Eventually, she... Page 34. Didn't even bother trying to lift them. Ken would simply have to help her. Mother had an even bigger problem. Spread out in one corner of her room was an enormous canvas rucksack, which she called the, quote, "going to camp bundle," unquote. She had bought it for the blankets and bedding that they were required to take into camp with them, but gradually she began to fill it with all sorts of odds and ends that wouldn't fit into her suitcases. Now it held the dishes and utensils they were also told to take to camp, as well as an electric hot plate, a kettle, and a teapot, a can of tea, a hot water bottle, a thermos, 2 flashlights, rubber boots and umbrellas, and a small bed lamp. Already the bundle was beginning to bulge widely in all directions, growing each day like some living creature. Every once in a while, Ken would look at it anxiously, saying, "I'll never make it into camp if I have to carry that enormous thing." Mother couldn't stop adding to it. "There's just no other place to put all the things we need," she said plaintively. And because Ken knew she was right, he watched in silence as the bundle grew bigger and bigger, dreading the day when he would have to stagger into camp with it. After a while, neither Ken nor Mother spoke of how they would manage getting the bundle into camp. It was something that would just have to happen. There was another problem that none of them wanted to discuss, but one evening it was Mother who brought it up. "We will have to find a home for Pepper soon," she said softly to Yuki. "You know we can't wait too much longer." Page 35. Yuki nodded. She knew something had to be done, and very soon. Mimi couldn't take him, because she already had a big German shepherd and 3 guinea pigs. Mrs. Jameson was taking old Salt, but couldn't manage Pepper because of her lame leg. "I'm not leaving Pepper with anybody I don't know," Yuki said firmly. "He'll be lonesome enough as it is." The difficulty was, however, that most of their friends were going into camp with them, and if they weren't, they already had pets of their own. Mother looked troubled, but she knew how much Pepper meant to Yuki. "Well, perhaps a good idea will come to us soon," she said, and she put off the decision for another day. Secretly, Yuki hoped both Mother and Ken would overlook the whole problem, and then maybe she could simply pick Pepper up and carry him into camp as though it were the most natural thing in the world. Maybe in all the excitement, no one would even notice. More and more, Ken was taking over as head of the house. Father signed the car over to him so it could be sold, and Ken was now able to withdraw money from Father's account. He made arrangements to buy war bonds and signed up for civil defense. Still, that hadn't given him the right to do what he did, Yuki thought. For one day, he made a decision about Pepper without even asking her. He simply said, "I found the perfect solution for Pepper. I put an ad in the Daily Cal at the university. Someone will want him, and they'll be happy living with somebody my age. Okay?" "No, it's not okay," Yuki shouted angrily. "You didn't even ask me." Page 36. If I'd asked you, you would have said no, right?" Yuki had to admit that she most certainly would have. "Well, then," Ken went on, "what would be your solution?" I'm going to smuggle him into camp," Yuki said limply. Ken didn't even give her a solution, a second thought. "It's settled, then," he said quietly. "We'll make sure Pepper goes to a nice person. Well, I'll decide that together." Ken did keep his word about that. Each time anyone came to see Pepper, he made sure that Yuki was there to meet him. Neither of them liked the first two boys who came. The first talked too much, and the second wanted Pepper for a fraternity house mascot. The third boy was a quiet, sandy-haired sophomore named Andy. He had just lost his own dog, and he had been wanting another in its place. I live right here in Berkeley, and could write you in camp to let you know how Pepper's doing," he said eagerly. His voice was gentle, and Yuki saw how Pepper wagged his tail and licked his hand when Andy went to pet him. "Okay, Yuki?" Ken asked. Yuki nodded. She gave Pepper one final hug and then ran into the house. She didn't want to stay and watch while Ken gave Andy Pepper's brush and comb and feeding dish. She hurried to her room and lay on her bed, holding her hands over her ears so she wouldn't hear Andy's car as it drove away with Pepper. Mother made her favorite barbecued spare ribs for dinner, but Yuki could scarcely eat. "I hate this whole stupid evacuation," she said grimly, and she ran outside, forgetting that there would be no Pepper to come. Page 38. Bounding up the steps to greet her, she went to the fish pond and threw pebbles into it, watching the old gray carp appear from beneath the lily pad, opening his mouth for something to eat. But tonight he didn't muse her at all. Yuki stood there, watching until it was too dark to see, biting her lip to keep back the tears. As the house grew emptier, the garden seemed to grow more and more beautiful with spring flowers. The flowering cherry looked like a pale pink cloud, and the peach tree blossomed like clusters of white popcorn. In the midst of their frantic packing, Yuki sometimes found Mother looking out the window and scribbling a poem on a scrap of paper. Yuki wished she could write poetry, too. She was filled with indescribable feelings these days, but she couldn't find the right words to put them down on paper. It was like having an ache deep down inside, but not being able to tell anyone just where it was. Mother seldom spoke of her aches or sadness, and rarely let anyone see her shed a tear. But she could make people understand how she felt by putting the right words in the fragile shell of poetry. "You are truly a gifted and sensitive poet," Mr. Toda said admiringly. Mother scoffed, saying, "You are simply a biased and kind friend, Toda-san." But Yuki knew that she was pleased. Mother felt almost as strongly about her plans as Yuki had about plants as Yuki had about Pepper. She couldn't bear to leave her favorite plants for strangers who would come after they left. She dug up her London smoke carnations, the yellow calla lilies, and the Berkshire climbing rose, and gave them to Mrs. Jameson and Mrs. Nelson. A few of Father's prized bonsais went to the minister of the Congregational Church. Page 39. "I'll take good care of them and return them whenever you come back," he promised. Some of Father's best gladiolas, however, went to a woman from up the block whom they scarcely knew. She appeared one day with a carton and trowel and asked if she could have them. "I thought you wouldn't mind," she explained, "since you're leaving anyway." Yuki didn't want her to have them, but Mother said it didn't matter. "Let her have them if it will make her happy," she said. Ken called her a vulture. "She's as bad as people in San Pedro who are buying refrigerators for $5 and cars for $25 from the Japanese who have to go first," he said bitterly. On April 21st, 1942, the headline in the Berkshire paper read, "Japs given evacuation orders here." Yuki shivered as she read it. "I wish they'd stop calling us Japs," she murmured. But that was the least of her problems now. The army had finally issued the order that all the Japanese in Berkeley must evacuate their homes. They were to report to the 10 Foreign Assembly Center by noon on May 1st. "That gives us exactly 10 days, Ken said nervously. "Think we can make it, Mom?" "We'll have to make it, Kenichi," Mother said calmly. Then she poured his coffee and Yuki's hot chocolate. "Eat your breakfast now," she said to them. "Evacuation orders or not, we still have to eat."